Welcome to Insta Poetic Justice, the first podcast of its kind discussing the ever-evolving terrain of poetry and technology and how these two have merged together to create the subgenre that is Insta Poetry. Here I will interview poets about poets as we weigh in on the positives and negatives of this new literary phenomenon. I'm your host, Amy Sophia Mayer. You can check out my poetry books at www.paganpoetess.com. Supporting me via my published works is the best way to ensure all these podcasts remain free and accessible to everyone. And now, on with the show. Welcome, poetry lovers, to another episode of Insta Poetic Justice. I'm your host, Amy Sophia Mayer, and today I am joined by the poet, Nori Sky. Hi, Nori.
Hi, hello.
Some of you may already know Nori. She has 13,300 followers on Instagram, as with each guest speaker. Her info will be in the description box of this episode, so you can check out her latest works. And also, don't forget to check out the poetry anthology, Poetry Cosmos, of which Nori is a co-author of. So, are you ready, Nori?
Yes, I'm ready.
Wonderful. So, of course, first foremost question, where are you from? Again, your background, and what do you do outside of poetry? Just give us a little synopsis of yourself.
Sure. Where I'm from as in the origins or the state?
Yeah, just state, whatever. However you wish to interpret that question.
Sure. I'm from the Bay Area, California, and outside of poetry, I'm a therapist. I work in different departments around the hospital, but it's mainly for decrease in anxiety, depression, lots of stress management, everything in the realms of mental health.
Oh, good. Well, that's definitely necessary, especially nowadays.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Can you say anything about how the pandemic has, had an impact on people just in your professional work?
That's a great question. So I feel there was a huge, I would say, conscious paradigm shift in the way that we live our life. And we had to, I feel like as individuals, and from what I've witnessed and observed, take that time to, and that space to really just look inwards and truly discover, what our values are, what makes us happy. That's beyond this kind of rat race of a world,
Of course. So I guess, again, you are a therapist, dealing with depression and anxiety. So from that in your professional sphere, what led you into poetry as a hobby?
I've definitely dealt with my own mental health journey. And poetry is, and writing in general, is something that was very cathartic for me. I started journaling, in high school, and it kind of just stems from there. And when I was during my undergrad, I discovered this poet. Her name was Emily Dickinson, and she definitely inspired me to write poetry, to basically write out your soul. She was definitely a very interesting person.
I'm curious, was there any specific mentor or anything that encouraged you to start journaling?
That's a great question. I haven't looked back that far. I think there was this site that was just very popular for journaling at the time. And I just kind of, I utilized it. Well, it was great. It was a huge start to my writing journey. I don't remember, per se, the particular or mentor. I'm so sorry. So sorry. Growing up, I grew up with Harry Potter. So, yes, I would say a mentor is J.K. Rowling.
Yes, mine too. I also grew up with Harry Potter, so stay tuned for my brand new Harry Potter podcast coming, The Rambling Raven Puffs.
Oh, that's so amazing.
I also looked up to J.K. Rowling, which makes her current transphobic things all the more distressing. But
yeah, I don't know how to feel about that. I just see her in such a great light. I'm hoping it's some sort of miscommunicated issue that has been misinterpreted. or something, because she's just in my mind, in my eyes, she's just such a hero for me.
Right. Yeah. So I was just curious about journaling, because I've been to therapy a handful of times throughout my life, and they usually latch on to if you have any inclination or tendency towards writing, they're always, please, please journal.
Oh, yes. It's a huge, for me, this is how I kind of put it. Whatever you have in words, whatever you have inside, it's always great to put into something tangible, into something physical, because then you're transmuting and translating and transferring the energy that you have within onto something that you can see, onto something tangible, something that you can work with. You know, you don't want to keep everything inside. I don't believe in repression, clearly. So it's a great modality to utilize to express everything you're holding within.
Alrighty then. So yeah, I would remember reviewing your Instagram, you know, page, and I just remember really, really liking your simple but elegant style of your poems, like the font you choose for the title, the font you choose for the stanzas. And I'm just curious, like, what sort of process did you go through on deciding on that format? Because I feel like it's a little more original than maybe some others I've seen. Like, it's a very distinct one, and it's yours, and I really like it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for that. You know, I dabble in graphic design as well. So I just, I was just playing around with graphic designing, and it was just fun for me with graphic designing and editing. And then I decided to, you know, create my own emblem. So that's why I created that bird. And then at the end of it says, you know, copyright Nuri Sky. Just for me, I've always been connected to birds. It's always been, I feel, a spirit animal for myself. So it was fitting, I guess.
Nice. My Patronus is the raven. So I can kind of relate.
Oh, you know, I actually tested into Hufflepuff.
Oh, I'm a hardcore Hufflepuff too.
That's great.
Yeah. So yeah, no, but again, I just really like your style, the combination of, you know, the really fancy font of the title, fairly simple in the stanzas, and then the little addition of the picture, like, to the left.
Oh yeah. It's a form of art for me. Thank you so much.
Of course. And so I'm curious, did you ever consider writing under a pseudonym or a nom de plume? Like, was there any specific reason to just wanting to go full on with Nuri Sky?
Actually, Nuri Sky is my pseudonym.
Oh, so yeah, so that is your official pseudonym. Okay, I thought maybe that might be the case, but I wasn't entirely sure, so I was going to ask the question.
No, oh, yeah, of course, happy to clarify.
Yeah. So again, so you do have a pseudonym. So again, what led you to Nuri Sky?
Well, Nuri is actually short for my full name, which is Norenisa. And Sky, I've always felt so connected to the sky, as in, you know, such as having this connection to birds. And also, I'm a Star Wars fan. So it's actually short for Skywalker.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's cute.
Thank you.
So in regards to your poetry, like, do you strike a balance, or do you tend to lean one towards the other? So do you try more to be original or to deliver to the readers what they want? Like, how do you feel which one do you think you do more?
That's a great question. I feel I try to be more true to just to my authentic self. I write whatever I feel at the moment, whatever I'm going through at the moment. Some of it is whatever I publish, it's some of it's, you know, a couple months ago or whichever. But I just try to take my writing journey along with my own, like, spiritual and personal journey.
Mm-hmm. And whoever just happens to like it, you know, is a bonus.
Yeah, that's a bonus. I mean, it's awesome to have souls out there who connect with you, you know, just regarding everything that you're going through. It feels like home.
Of course, absolutely. So for you, when you're thinking of a poem, what comes first? The title, the structure, or the imagery? So there are many ways to approach a poem.
Oh, you're asking so many great questions. So when something first comes to mind, it's a feeling for me. I could be meditating, or I could just be sitting in silence and, you know, processing either my day or everything going on, and the words just kind of spill out of me. It starts with how I feel, and mm-hmm. then it just comes. It's hard to explain. It's almost transcendental.
That's perfectly all right. Even I could not answer this one fully, because I feel like different poems start in different ways. Although I tend to really like prompts, whether it's like a season or a tarot card or a specific emotion. I start with a prompt, if you will, and then everything just flows from there.
Mm-hmm. We all have different ways in which we process.
Of course. So in your opinion, in what important ways does poetry differ from fiction?
In which ways poetry differs from fiction? I don't think it does.
You don't think it does?
No, I think...
Tell me more.
I think poetry can be very connected to fiction. Sometimes we have something in our minds, it's hard to translate it, and we have to kind of personify some sort of vision or imaginary idea we have in our minds. And sometimes that's connected to like a subconscious reason in which we've kind of come up with that sort of explanation. But I feel like it's all connected, fiction, mm-hmm. nonfiction. Just my opinion, yeah.
Alrighty, wonderful. Does your family support your hobby as a poet and just writing in general?
I feel my family, they're not always understanding of the process, but they do support me. mm-hmm. Writing has been something that my mom was interested in as well when she was younger.
Mm-hmm.
But, I have a very interesting family, to say the least. They're one of the, I would say, inspirations to a lot of my writing.
Of course. Again, we are the sum of our experiences, are we not?
That is true. Yes, it is.
Yeah, I was just curious, because definitely for me, especially my father was... and my mom were not that supportive of my like writing and certain creative outlets, because I felt like I took time away from what they thought was like more important in terms of my education or job hunting or whatever. But now that I'm almost 30 and I'm like established, you know, in my career and in a career that I'm good at and is stable, like my mom has sort of carried up laid off and is okay, she writes on the side and, you know, she pays her bills and is a good pays her taxes as a contributing member to society. Who cares if she writes on the side? But even to this day, I sometimes feel like my father doesn't like that I spend so much time like writing or my creative outlets.
As long as it makes you happy, I feel that's the most important.
Yeah, of course. And like when he wants me to go get a PhD and I'm just like, Dad, I have 2 masters. I'm okay with having my job in writing. I don't need a PhD.
Brilliant.
So I'm curious, since you think of, you know, poetry and fiction as sort of within the same spectrum, what authors did you originally dislike at first, but then you grew into them?
That's a great question. I don't know if I truly disliked an author per se. Can't really think of one.
Excuse me. I swallowed my water the wrong way.
Oh, no. Are you okay?
Yeah, I'll be fine.
Okay.
So if you didn't have an author that you particularly disliked and grew into, then what would you say? You talked about Emily Dickinson, of course, but any other writers that had a big impact on you?
Emily Dickinson, for sure. J.K. Rowling. I appreciate and admire Eckhart Tolle, mm-hmm. Elizabeth Lesser, Angelus Arian, Rupi Kaur, of course.
She's
amazing. I think that's from the top of my head. That's those are the main ones.
That's plenty of food for thought. So for you, or to you, what are some of the most prevalent ingredients that goes into the concoction we call an instant poet?
I would say artistic, creative, brave, courageous. It's hard sometimes. It's challenging, actually, to put yourself out there on social media.
And it's brave, not just in just on a general sense. It's being brave as an artist to put your work out there, but specifically with the stigma of, like, if it's Instagram, then automatically some people dismiss the work's merit just because you're using social media in that way.
Mm-hmm.
So, alrighty then. And then last question. To you, how important is accessibility of meaning? Should one have to work hard to solve a poem?
By solve, do you mean edit?
Not solve, I guess, you know, should one have to work hard to solve a poem as in the reader reading it? Should there be, like, some hidden subtext and metaphors that should be a part of the poetry reading process? Because, again, a reason I ask this question is a lot of people give Insta poetry a lot of flack for being what they perceive as quite simple.
I see. You know, I believe everything in general is open for interpretation, especially poetry, especially writing. It's a medium that allows people just to envision and imagine their own perception of what they think is so. No, I think it's open for interpretation.
Alrighty then. So those are all the questions I had. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And now we can move on to the recitation of your poems. So would you like to share a poem with us, please?
Sure. It's quite nerve-wracking. But here it goes. Okay. This one's a soliloquy.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And it's from my Existential Acumen series. It's called Thanks. It's called Melancholy.
Go for it.
Melancholy. That's what that was. It was melancholy. For I must have missed the whereabouts of home. I don't believe I've ever yearned for a place I've never seen, possibly a place I've never been. They once told me that this is all training. They said, you have been anointed to prepare your soul on this earth for what comes next after this life, to become the vessel of divinity for magic to work through your veins. Earth thus portrays a pit stop seemingly of some sort, a realm of dazzling amusement. These amused parks filled with obscene dreams beyond your various imagination, as vivid as the eyes can see. Let us not forget these roller coaster rides as tall as Everest, you know, the ones that terrify. Let us not forget that one particular ride your very coercion forced you adrift. They mention those moments of loss and grief as that of your ultimate favorite jacket, wandering amidst, stolen and emptied into the void of holes that only is black. They speak of the treacherous thrill, the pitiful peaks, and the drops so steep it bled your heart dry, a thousand times awry. Perhaps it's when they speak upon those moments of utmost bliss, you know, those moments that make your heart sing a thousand and trillion realms of music and strings. It's in those moments I became conscious of myself wandering, and conscious to recall the time to sail home, this home that only unveils in the lucidity of my dreams. No matter that, rise or fall, no matter where I wander, my faith in this is true. I'll always find home, beyond the constructs created in these matrices in which materialism reigns. It lies within the depths of your brightest light, and beyond the depths of your darkening shadows. Keep moving forth, and there you wake to what's true, the truth untethered to that of the materialism in this world, the carnival of abstract and quantum pleasure and diversion. It's right there in which you will find the gods that are unseen, beyond that of these eyes in three.
That was very deep and existential. I was not anticipating that.
Oh.
No, but that was really good, like, again, because all of us, we all wonder that what awaits us in the afterlife.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yes, at least you phrased a lot more eloquently than I would have done.
Oh, we all have our ways of expressing existentialism beautifully.
So since your previous poem was so long, I think we have time for if you could just recite one more of your poems, please.
Sure. Sorry about that.
No, please.
Okay. I'll go ahead and recite a little love poem.
Go for it.
Okay, this is from my Amour memoir series, and it's called Parallel.
Mm-hmm.
I wander adrift this dimension, peruse, seldom thoroughly seen. I happen to stumble upon you. The construct of tethered time weaved into our very reality had stopped. You felt familiar, parallel in vibrational frequency, imperfectly perfected in synchronicity. I believe we were once friends, you and I. The intricate details of our silhouette prancing away into the incandescent constellations may not be a prevalent and conscious memory, but incontestably, we were one of the past. With every fiber of my being, I knew we were once friends, you and I, soulmates.
Mm-hmm. Nice. I liked the notion of like tethered time, because what is time? Does the fourth dimension even exist, or is that a social construct?
Right. Time definitely, I feel, is a construct, but yeah, it could be. In quantum theory, it could be existing. The past could be existing simultaneously as the future. Different possible futures. It's very interesting stuff.
Yeah, like whoever decided that time was linear.
Oh, yep. Whoever did.
I don't know. Man, you're growing really deep now.
Oh.
Alrighty then. Well, thank you so much. Those were deep existential poems. Good food for thought for us to question our very existence. I like it.
Thank you. Thank you for listening.
So now we'll move on to the Instapoet for this episode's discussion, which is R.H. Sin. And I asked all my poets this, you know, I reached out to everyone, you know, gave them the list, and people gave like their top three. So out of curiosity for you, what made you decide you wanted to discuss R.H. Sin with me?
Well, R.H. Sin is, I feel he's a very woman empowered poet. It's one thing that did attract me to him. He's definitely someone who sees and feels and understands the journey that women would have to go through. And it's very interesting that he does. I feel like it's also because his wife is so existential and influential as well in his life for him to, you know, be able to kind of see through the veils a little bit.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Go on.
No, yeah, he's very much like a little like Atticus in that way, if not even more so.
Yeah, for sure. They respect and admire women, I feel.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, yeah, I honestly could not find, you know, with each poet that, you know, I gave a little description of them, but I honestly could not find that much written, like a little intro paragraph about him. All I have is, R.H. Sin was born in the United States on March 22nd, 1989. So that makes him almost 2 years older than me. His first novel was, or novel, sorry. I'm doing so many podcasts, reading so many novels for podcasts and BookTube. It's all a blur at this point. So his first published collection was Whiskey, Words, and a Shovel in 2015. And it was a bestseller, and it was on Oprah's Book Club, apparently.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah, which I did not know that. But yeah, but other than that, I couldn't find that much about him.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So I chose a few poems. Like, I specifically, for research for this podcast, I bought a variety of poetry collections. So I bought this poetry collection called Falling Towards the Moon. It's a collection that he collaborated with R.M. Drake to do.
I've actually heard of that one.
Yeah, so I bought it. And so, yeah, all of his poems, R.H. Sin's poems, are in the latter half of the book.
Oh, I see.
So, yeah, so one of the poems that I decided I wanted to read aloud was from that collection, page 129, and it's called Far and Near. Midnight moon in May, dreaming of June. Soon this will be over. Soon I will be sober. Free of these chains, no longer bound by the time I invested in a love that never manifested. You were the nothing I should have ignored. You were the something I should have stayed away from. And so I sit beneath a midnight moon, thinking soon I'll walk away from you.
Oh, I felt that one.
Yeah, I just really like the phrase of midnight moon, because, I don't know, we don't really pair those words together, but it makes sense because, you know, I don't know when exactly, I'm a pagan and I still don't know this, like when exactly is the time during the night that the moon reaches the absolute tallest, highest point in the sky? I don't know, but
that's a good question. I think I'll look that up some other time.
Yeah, but and even because of that phrase, I didn't mind that he said in May, dreaming of June, because of course moon, June, that's such a stereotypical combination of rhymes. But because of, you know, the interesting word choice, I didn't mind it that much.
You know, it's very interesting how he compared, you know, an alcoholic like beverage to his love. It's almost like it's almost like being in love is analogous to addiction.
Yeah, which has been done before, but again, I feel like he does it in a way that is a little more original. It's not like I read this and I enjoyed it. It's not like I read it and I'm like, oh, I've heard this so many times before. But yeah, so would you like to read one of your poems of his that you chose?
Absolutely. Okay. Okay, so let's see. I think I'm going to go with this one. It's called 11:50 p.m. And it goes, it's hard. It's always been difficult. But I just think we're looking for the type of love that doesn't destroy us in the end. The type of love that helps us evolve and grow. It's important to realize that this type of love is only attainable once self-love is achieved.
Ah, yes, the classic, we must love ourselves before loving others.
And definitely true. Because how do you know true love if you don't love yourself first? But I feel it's almost a little deeper than that. For you to go inwards into your journey and journey towards that phase, that stage of utmost love, all the veils open up. You know, you're connected to something just so infinite and so beautiful. Like everything you see, your perception now of reality is just love, love, love. So it's almost like, you know, fill your cup, make it tremendously overflowing, and then therefore you have that love to give, and you can see that love within others when you have it within yourself.
Yeah. And again, I like the message of not a love that is self-destructive, because to me, you know, there's that sort of toxic love, but of course I don't perceive that to be love. It's more of like infatuation when you're so desperate to appease someone and it's like a challenge or it's like a chore. But yeah, so right. I like that notion of it as well.
Right. That the moving away from trauma bonding to mature love.
Right. So another one I have here is on page 191 of this collection. What was yours called?
11:50 p.m.
It was called 11:50 p.m. So this poem that I chose from this collection is called 1:11 a.m.
Oh, synchronicity.
So I guess he has a kind of series like this. Okay, so what does this one say? Those empty bottles are filled with stories of a lonesome heart falling toward the moon, in search of more, in search of peace. You reach out into the middle of the night, hoping for answers, wishing on stars, whispering to the moon, eager to open up with this overwhelming desire to be heard. And maybe the pages in this book are the ears that are worthy of hearing your story. And maybe fate brought you here, maybe the universe knows that your soul needed something to get you through the night. Maybe this is it. So wow. I liked this poem. I think I chose it because it was the one poem, Falling Towards the Moon, that had that phrase in the title. So like that, this is the poem that they chose the title from, both R. H. Sin and R. M. Drake.
That's so beautiful. Oh my gosh, I love that one.
Yeah. Yeah, but I didn't notice any others like titled that way. He must have like those sort of time poems like sprinkled throughout his stuff.
Probably. That was really deep. I really appreciate that one. Yeah, it's almost enlightening. He's talking about, you know, trying to find, you know, your soul's utmost bliss, right? Like Joseph Campbell says, follow your bliss. It's almost it's almost like the moon is the illuminating night within the darkness to find.
And I like the last bit of that your soul needed something to get you through the night. And I think it's like making the point of this is what poetry is about, like finding that emotional connectivity in literature and with people.
Right. No, I agree. Yeah, that was beautiful.
All right, then would you like to share another one, please?
Absolutely. Let's see here. Okay, so this one is called A Refusal, A Strength. And goes, I'm finding more of myself in my journey towards peace, learning to let go of anger that once plagued my soul and altered the direction of most of my days. I'm finding my voice beneath the heaviness of the pain that once caused me to shut down, refusing to remain silent about the things that broke me. I refuse to be a prisoner of heartache.
I like the last line a lot. I refuse to be a prisoner of heartbreak.
Hmm.
because I could have used that line a few times during my early formative years, because I feel like when I was younger, especially with breakups, I suffered from a really hardcore victim mentality. And I realize now just kind of how self-destructive that was.
No, I empathize. I feel like when you're younger, you do have that kind of developmental stage where, you know, you do feel like you're the victim. And then you get older and you realize, you know, you have a choice, you have options, and you have the option to forgive and let go. And it's liberating, essentially. Mm-hmm. Liberating.
All right. Thank you so much for that. Here, let me pick another one. This is on page 10. Oh, yes. It's short, but I really like it. Vanity killed the poet. Vanity ruined the meaning behind the words. Vanity destroyed the art. So I really like that because it goes into this whole, again, theme of the podcast with insta-poetry, because a lot of people are, again, they think insta-poetry is basically, not only is it bad poetry, but also that to a certain extent it's narcissistic. Yeah, and so, like, I'm not saying he agrees with that or anything, but it's certainly that poem is emblematic of that sort of position that a lot of people have, that they're, because of the innate vanity and narcissism of social media, you know, the vanity ruins any sort of meaning that you of a poem that you put online.
It definitely can, for sure, especially if it involves your ego. You know, once you live through your ego and you're being spearheaded by the ego, it's kind of more challenging to reach the soul. And I feel like poetry is the language of the soul, so that resonates.
Of course. Would you like to read your next poem, please?
Yes, I would. Okay, so this one is called Scene 13. And it's it reads, "Who were you before you decided to let the world dictate who you'd become? Sure enough, you've always been beautiful, and yet you've struggled to see this because society took your truth, then replaced it with lies. I wish you knew just how remarkable you are. I wish you knew just how amazing you already were before the world told you who you should be." I love this. I resonate with this so profoundly. You know, growing up, my family and, you know, I feel like most of the world, they want you to be a perception of who they think you are, who they want you to be, what makes them comfortable, you know. And growing up, I've always been a people pleaser, and I still kind of am. I'm definitely working on it. But you lose yourself in that sense of people pleasing. You know, you shrink yourself, you make yourself small, and then that essentially kind of drives you away from your authentic truth, who you are, you know, why you're here. So that resonates with me very, very immensely. Just growing up, just feeling very small and finally getting to the part and the stage and where I am in my life where I do feel like, you know, I can take up that space. And you can, because the universe is vast, it's enormous, it's huge, there's room for everyone. When we have this idea that, like, you know, there's not enough opportunity and there's not enough this, and but when you come from a place of lack, you're almost closing yourself off to, you know, the divine universe to offer you these opportunities that are there, and they're there for you because it's your path, I feel.
Yeah, no, I think that's a deep evolutionary, like, blueprint in our DNA to view the world, like, as this through the lens of finite resources. Yeah, but of course I think it pulls us back. Like, I resonated with that one too, like the message and stuff, because certainly I can relate to all those sentiments, but at the same time, it wasn't, of all the other ones we've read so far, it wasn't one of my favorites in terms of actual, like, poetry. It's like one of those things where I kind of understand the critics of insta poetry, where they think they're just, like, pretty quotes and not poems. But it's, again, it's entirely subjective. Like, I know there are poems from other poets that probably have a similar format, and I would consider them poetry, and I think they're so great, and another person might look at it and just be like, meh, the way I was just meh with that sort of poem. So it's just interesting, you know, that, you know, people, you know, poetry is purely subjective, and I hate it when certain critics, particularly those of the traditional literary and poetic establishment, want to say that their opinion matters more, you know, than some others.
Yeah, and that's why there's so much poetry and there's so much writing in the world. There's always something and someone to resonate with.
Alrighty then. So I've got another poem here from, let's see, it's page 221 from Falling Towards the Moon. So let's see. Who knew the heart could rain, thunder forming within the soul? But storms teach us how to be stronger. We all have cloudy skies to overcome. So I really like that because, again, it's very short, very simple, like in some of. But just the way a heart could rain and thunder forming within the soul, I felt like that was a clever way to use that very common euphemism of the storm and the tempest as, you know, personal struggles.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. It's a very beautiful way to kind of connect the two, for sure. And growth is beautiful that way. It looks like this incredible storm that's scary, but it's almost necessary because with immense growth comes like this immense challenge. It's almost like friction, rubbing two things together to make something move.
Alrighty then, and would you like to read one last poem from him, please?
Yes, absolutely. Let's see. Going in between these two, but I think I'm going to choose Savage.
Oh, nice.
And for all the listeners, please excuse me for the language. It's in the poem. Okay, so the poem's called Savage, and it goes, "It's not always pretty, and she's not always this picture-perfect bullshit definition of what's considered to be beautiful. But that's a woman, someone capable of becoming whatever she needs to be, whenever she needs to be it. Sometimes she's a savage, but only when appropriate, an alpha among the wolves. And when shit gets tough, whenever her life becomes a war zone, she scrapes her fucking boots and goes to war. She fights. She's always been a fighter." Ah, I love that. It's just like I said, so R.H. Sin, just very like women empowered. He's all about women empowerment, and I love it. I love it. It's great.
Yeah, and I think it says a lot, makes me think of, women are supposed to be primed to be, again, de basically decorations and ornaments to society, but so often we take on what is called a lot of times as emotional labor and just all daily logistics of life often fall to women, and that is its own like struggle and form of hard work and labor that not everyone acknowledges because patriarchy, down with patriarchy.
Oh yeah, for sure. It's been in rain for a very long time, and I think it's time for a conscious paradigm shift in regards to the gender system.
Of
And
course.
I want to apologize. I didn't ask you if it was okay to curse. Oh,
Oh yeah, it's fine.
okay.
Just as long as it's not like every other word you say, like in the context of a context of a poem, that's fine. Or even
Okay.
just a word here or there is fine.
I did struggle. It's like, should I choose this one? It's a little bit expressive.
Well, if I were to, make that a deal breaker, then I would be leaving out quite a few Insta poets.
Oh, good to know.
Okay. Alrighty then. Well, thank you so much for analyzing those poems with me. And so now we can move on to the sort of exercise of I found sometimes I get a like 1 or 2 star review about a certain poet or one of their books. Sometimes I get an article or a specific review. So this came from an article that was from Salon.com back in 2017, and it was called "Where Have All the Good Male Poets Gone?" I'm assuming, playing off the old "Where Have All the Good Men Gone?" So, and I'm really interested to hear your take on this little excerpt because you said one of the reasons that you like R.H. Sin so much is because he taps into the female experience, right? So here is a different perspective and a very negative reaction to his decision to focus on women. So here we go. Early in the year, one of these writers, R.H. Sin, took a hiatus from Twitter because the writing community started to question the credibility of his work. How could someone who has lived his whole life as a male write from the female perspective? And when asked this, how could someone who has become wealthy off of the female experience completely denounce those same women who then tried to educate him on how he has no right to speak on their behalf. Reuben was offended. Reuben was offended by the backlash. Instead of opening himself up to understanding in a compassionate way the reason why some women struggle with his platform, he instead reverted in a stunning example of male fragility to calling them half-witted critics and to diminishing their concerns. The women who have so eagerly inspired the work that has made him a player in the poetry community are now less great than him, less credible, less talented, less only worthy enough to be walked on, ignored, discredited.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, so I'm curious, how do you feel about that interpretation of, you know, some women getting to a point that, you know, you don't have, saying to him, you don't have a right to speak on our behalf or try to appropriate our experiences? Because basically, in their eyes, in some critics' minds, it seems they interpret his style and emphasis on women as a type of appropriation that's not his to usurp.
That's, I'm almost speechless. I had no idea that this was an issue or this had happened.
And some people do, I know I haven't read anything in detail, but I know people have accused Atticus of the same thing. If you're a male poet and you're, like, some people perceive it as capitalizing on the suffering of women and that feeling of nostalgia and empowerment to bolster their own platforms without really meaning it.
I can see why they would feel that way, and they are, and their opinion is real and true in the perspective of them. It's hard to say, only because I don't know, you know, these poets personally, so I don't exactly know, like, what's going in their heads, what their true intention is. I just choose to see the positive in things, and I choose to see, like, the goodness and giving people the benefit of the doubt. If he did, in fact, reacted in that way and stated those types of phrases, I do feel there is a better way to kind of to say this, to respond. And I'm pretty much speechless. I don't know.
Sorry, I didn't mean to shock you here.
No.
I'm kind of, I tend to be more of the opinion in, you know, people, you know, want more diversity in literature. And so part of that is, first and foremost, bringing more poets and writers of color and of other, you know, gender orientations and whatever into the picture, but also to embrace another level of embracing diversity is, you know, to let white writers talk about, you know, these, you know, certain issues. And then, but if you try to do that, there again, there's the camp of this who says, like, you don't know what the hell you're talking about. And I don't know, like, again, from his stuff, I feel like he has a pretty good understanding and empathy. Like, I never, even when reading this and knowing that some people criticized him about this, when I personally read his book, I did not feel offended or affronted. Like, and especially in the insta poetry realm, where there are a lot of female writers. So I feel like there are enough female writers, you know, that are like Amanda Lovelace, Rupi Kaur, and, you know, those types that are talking about female empowerment and the female experience. So the fact that a guy is writing about it too, I don't feel like that takes away anything. I'm glad that a guy is joining the conversation.
I'm going to have to agree with you there. Whether it's male or female, I feel that, especially when we're just kind of working towards, like, a greater whole, that should be more looked at than, you know, only females can speak about female empowerment, only males can speak about male empowerment. That just, it embraces this idea of separatism, and I'm not for that. I'm not for separatism. I'm more for just, like, unity, oneness. So we can get to that point as a human. I feel like we'd be much happier.
Yeah, this to me is definitely, this smell reeks to me of a very militant form of feminism that I'm not really for, that, again, I think is separatist and is just dividing the sexes, you know, in a kind of sanctimonious way.
Yeah, it feels that way. It feels like there's lots of anger. There's under there, you know, anger that.
But again, I personally was not offended by it, and I think there are plenty of female writers and females in the Insta poetry scene that I don't think RHM has any specific monopoly that, and I'm just happy that, you know, that a guy thinks about these things.
Yeah, that is true.
Alrighty then, but again, that was a good review, because like all the things you loved about him in the beginning, I'm like, oh, interesting, because I know that's why so many people hate him.
So there's always different perspectives, you know. No one's ever going to agree on everything, so
yeah,
I guess it's what makes the world and what makes human human and fruitful, that we're not going to agree, but coming to an understanding that, you know, we're gonna agree to disagree, and that's okay. Like that's where we, I feel, would benefit in our growth anyway.
Alrighty then. So let us end on a more uplifting activity. So we're now going to do the hashtag InstaPoetry game activity, if you will. So sure. Do you have your phone ready?
I do.
So yeah, if you could just pull up Instagram, and if you could search the hashtag InstaPoetry. And bear in mind, not just to do the top ones, but also to do the most recent ones.
Insta poetry.
Yeah.
Okay, right there.
Oh, interesting. So Instagram, you know, how there's usually a you know, two tabs, one that's like top, the most popular, and then others are the more recent.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if it's on your phone, but for my Instagram, it's saying recent posts from all hashtags are temporarily hidden to help prevent the spread of possible false information and harmful content related to the election. Oh my god, so they even took away the most recent option because we're, you know, less than a week from the election. Wow. Right. Okay, so there's no option, so yeah, so just look through your, here, let's see. Oh, this one is by Sabina Laura, who I did had a whole episode dedicated to her, but this is what she just posted.
Mm.
I will take this heart into the wild and hope the fresh air can awaken it.
I love that. Mm-hmm. It's very embodied.
Yeah, and definitely I can resonate with that, because like once or twice a week, you know, because, you know, there are so few things we can do outside, I like to go into the lake country and hike with my husband. So like, I think they technically call it like forest bathing, just that I don't like jog. I don't like, it's not super endurance, but it's just walking constantly for 2 hours, and it's just so refreshing.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, we're so. That's what that makes me think of. So alrighty then, you choose one now that speaks to you. It doesn't have to be the very first one, just whatever comes to mind.
Hmm. Let's see.
What?
There's a lot about love.
Of course, again, while you're finding a poem, I'm just thinking, like, I can't believe fake news has gotten so bad that I can't even do my poetry exercise like I used to.
Interesting times.
Well, I guess it shows good. It shows that a lot of people are putting pressure on Facebook to take responsibility for its role.
For sure. That's always good. Oh, I found something.
Okay, go for it.
Okay, so it's by Unknown. But it says, why do we close our eyes when we pray, when we cry, when we kiss, when we dream? Because the most beautiful things in our life are not seen but felt only by the heart. Oh, I love that. That's so true.
Yeah, and again, it's one of those things where it seems very simple, and I can see why others would not like it, but I really like it, and that's totally a poem.
Yeah, it just brings you back to the essence, you know, because the eyes can only see so far, but the heart is connected to the soul, and it's felt on a level of molecular vibration. In shamanic traditions, you know, they talk about journey to the drum and beats of the drum and sonic waves, and just like the music and drumming and sound is what connects you to the essence, which is very interesting, because it's also like in the realms of like quantum physics, how they talk about the string theory, and it's all sonic waves, and we are basically molecular molecules that are taking up space in vibrational movement. So that's awesome.
Okay, here, this one is by The Squash Stories. That's their username. Very short. Have you loved someone so much you tried to understand them while they were hurting you?
Mm.
No, I'm sorry, not feeling it. Needs a little more structure for me.
I guess they were in dire of someone answering the question. But I mean, I can relate to this. I've definitely tried to empathize with people who have, hurt me, because I believe that hurt people, and they've definitely been through something in order for them to project, even on a subconscious level, like this level of pain, because behind anger is grief, so.
Of course. So yeah, no, I totally relate to it as well, but I just would have liked a little extra kick to make it a whole poem, just a short poem. Alrighty, you pick one now.
Okay, I'm going to pick a long one. Let's see if I can just find the first long one. Okay, let's see. Reminder, take the time to think about all the things you've always wanted and all the ways you can manifest them. Try to not do this without getting frustrated or putting yourself down. Your growth will take time. There are lessons you will need to master. Be kind to your process and do not give up. This is more of an affirmation, I feel like, than a poem, but
yeah,
it's a beautiful message. Keep moving forward. Be kind to your process because it is unique to yourself and your journey. Keep moving forward because growth takes time. It's like watering a plant. We are essentially human plants.
We are, and we're made of consists mostly of water.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Alrighty then. The next poem is from an account called Poetry Rise from Delhi, India. Do you sit alone somewhere where it's still dark in the day, waiting for the stars to shine, and hopefully rain showers to be yours, only hope to make you feel unmiserable and keep going?
Aww.
That's interesting. I like that just because the, like, dark in the day, like, I'm on this current kick where I like the notion of, like, the dark day and the bright night. Like that paradoxical dichotomy. So any poems with that sort of thing, I'm all for right now.
Oh, that's beautiful. It reminds me of, a little off topic, but it reminds me of this, I went hiking and I captured a moment where the sun and the moon were literally almost next to each other. I thought, oh,
like
wow.
An eclipse?
Not like an eclipse, but when the sun's about to go down and that's when the moon starts rising, there's just that moment. I actually have a photo if you're interested. It's actually that moment where they're just next to each other. It's almost as like it is that paradox where they just greet each other and they admire each other for its time. And okay, it's time to go. It's time to start the show. That's interesting.
Alrighty then. So would you like to pick one?
Okay. Let's see. A lot of them were very short, and I totally understand that because I feel like with Insta poetry, it's kind of hard. It's challenging for people these days to kind of keep the attention.
Of course.
I can be one of those people. So let's see. Oh, this one looks kind of cute. Okay, so Beauty and the Beast, part two.
Oh, I just saw that one. Yeah, go for that one.
Yeah, okay. N.R. Hart. It will get easier, they said, forgetting about you. But they misunderstood about you and me and the moon, because the purest love exists not only in the light, but also in the darkness. Oh, I love that. And yes. How you cannot have one without the other. I never feared your darkness, for I was in love with your moonlight. And it was in your untamed strength that lured me the most, the wild beast lurking within the man that only a true beauty can love. Oh, I love that. That's so romantic.
Yeah, I like it. And again, it is a cliche that, light and darkness cannot exist without each other, but she presented it in a way that I felt was pretty fresh. And this especially resonates with me is, have you read Sarah J. Maas's The Court of Thorns and Roses series?
Oh, I have not.
Well, it's basically a retelling of Beauty and the Beast with fairies. So all those characters and everything that happens, it totally, reminds me. This poem reminds me of all those books. I just finished the second one and I'm going to order the third book in a few days. So I'll finish the trilogy.
Very nice. No, yeah. I really love this. It just talks about how she loves the darkness. It's so easy to love the light in people. Because it's nice, it's light, it's shiny. But the darkness is one of the most challenging parts of a person, and everyone has that. We all have our dark side.
And our heart. Oh, wait a minute. I emailed her to be on my podcast. She never responded to me, but her poetry is still awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Alrighty then. Here, let me pick one more, and one that's not in Hindi, because I can't read that.
Oh. No, I'm going to follow her now. And our heart. Hi. That's beautiful.
Alrighty, here's one called from D-Blogs in Mumbai. In the morning darkness, the flashbacks are a bane. They give me agony. They are a reminder of what I don't have, who I have lost, what I could have had sometimes. Flashbacks just take me back.
Wow, that feeling of nostalgia.
Yeah, didn't like it as much as the previous one, but again, in the morning darkness, like the, you know, the crack of dawn. I especially like bane. I feel like bane is a really good poetic word that not enough people use. I feel like it's dying out, especially in American English, but I like it.
Old English is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It's so romantic.
Mm-hmm. Alrighty then. And that wraps up our episode. That wraps up today's episode of Insta Poetic Justice. Thank you so much for coming on to the show, Nori.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Wonderful. And listeners, tune in next time where I will interview another poet and tackle another Insta Poetry giant. Take care, everybody. Bye.